This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good evening. This is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by two former United youth players to talk over another very difficult week for Manchester United. It might sound like this is a re-record of previous episodes. Unfortunately, same problems, different days. So a lot of the same stuff you might be familiar with, but at the same time, a lot of new things to talk about as well. Joined by Lee Lawrence, first of all. How are we doing, Lee? You all right?
I'm okay, mate. Thank you very much for asking. Been in about 10 minutes again from work, so it was a quick wash and straight onto the podcast. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the cast, although there's not many positives we can take from it. Obviously, have a bit of a conversation about what we need, what we think we need to improve on to go forward. And like we've just been saying then, try and literally start our season all over. We're probably 10 games or more in.
Yeah. And also, evening, Phil. How are you doing? Eventful week for you, Phil. You've got a new job.
Yeah, very eventful, mate. So I had an appointment at the hospital just to sort of check over my injury. I had an operation, obviously, not so long ago. That's healing okay, but it's still not fully healed. So I've been told sort of after Christmas is probably a more realistic timescale for when I can maybe start back playing properly, because I need to have some sort of metal work removed out of my foot. But yeah, just obviously had a phone call from one of my friends who's just got a job and obviously offered me a part in that. And, you know, I think it's a really good opportunity for me to sort of go in there and obviously help out with some coaching and just, you know, it's a great club, it's a good facility. And it's at a good level of football, so I just think it's a good opportunity for me to go in and sort of get that little bit more experience at a high level and test myself really as well, and hopefully help some of these younger players who are trying to, you know, make a living out of the game.
Nice one. If you're watching back on, if you're watching live on YouTube, feel free to get your comments and questions. And if you're watching live as well, please subscribe and like the video. If you're watching the replay, do comment. We do reply to the comments. And if you're listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe on the platform you're listening on, if you can leave a review on the platform you're listening on as well, we really, really appreciate that. And it helps us out a lot. Yeah, it never rains, but it pours at Old Trafford. And so much negative stuff to talk about this week and the bad stuff and depressing things, and really the first thing to talk about is the really, really tragic and sad passing today of Cathy Ferguson, the wife of Sir Alex. That sayings, you know, like every great man has a great woman behind them. That's definitely true of Sir Alex. Cathy was a rock through some very dark days at Old Trafford, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, but she was the catalyst really behind his U-turn from retirement in 2001. She stayed at 2003. So if you're not stayed in 2002 and signed a new contract. And obviously we wouldn't have seen another European Cup, or we might not have seen another European Cup. We certainly wouldn't have seen the great team in the same way that it was, you know, Wayne Rooney, Cristiano Ronaldo, the future would have looked very different. Might not have passed Liverpool on league titles yet. And these two lads sat beside me on the podcast this evening, wouldn't have had the opportunity to be managed by Sir Alex. So just monumental figure. And, you know, United, because obviously football up until very recently, Manchester United at least, were predominantly a men's team, men's club. The number of influential women associated with United, the list was, you know, quite small. Still is really, because it's you know, the female side of the game is growing. But Cathy Ferguson is definitely on that list as a massively influential figure. And it's a sad day for the Ferguson family. And a sad day for Manchester United as well. And it has been a sad week, disappointing week. Crystal Palace defeated us at the weekend. Extremely, extremely disappointing week. But we could be sat here all night talking about calamitous defeats. And I think there's enough from Galatasaray to pick the bones out of, because it was such a kamikaze game. Started well. Højlund scoring, Rashford crossing. You know, Højlund looked the business. And then we conceded a goal straight away. And then in the second half, Højlund scores this sensational goal where he puts the afterburners on, gets beyond the defender, and you're thinking, all right, we mean business finally. That was a goal that really... It was a difficult start to that second half at Old Trafford, because we were starting to notice a lot of trouble around us with the Turkish fans that had got into the home section and the, you know, the lack of segregation there and the issues that have since been talked about by the club. So there's a really mad atmosphere around us in all pockets of the stadium, by the way. So when Højlund scored, it really felt like there's a weird kind of electricity around. And then we concede a goal straight away. After that, concede a penalty. Casemiro sent off and, you know, they missed the penalty. And then they go through and score the winner straight after that. And just absolutely bonkers game of football. And United now will be looking, you know, unfortunately, be looking to get third place in Europa League. I know, yeah, there's four games still to be played and anything can happen in Turkey. But realistically speaking, United have been handed a very hard reality check in this competition so far. Phil, come to you first on this one. What did you make of what you saw on Tuesday night? If you've been able to compute what happened on Tuesday night yet, what sense have you made out of it?
Yeah, as you say, it was a crazy game. I think, as you said again, which has been a pattern all season, we have started the games pretty well. You know, the first 20 minutes looked on the front foot, obviously got our noses in front. But again, I think it came down to, you know, just not having that sort of leadership and sort of, you know, mentality at the back to smell danger and to sort of manage the game. As you say, we scored a goal to go 2-1 up and then conceded again straight away, which has sort of been a reoccurring theme throughout the season. Obviously, the injuries have been a massive hindrance. But again, you know, we've got some seasoned pros there that should be doing a lot better. Again, you look at, you know, the positives from the other night. I think Højlund was brilliant. The sort of way he took both of his goals was outstanding. I think obviously that was by far his best performance that we've seen. The second goal sort of reminded me a little bit of Van Nistelrooy. Not in the same way, but, you know, as a centre-forward, when you have that arrogance to just pick up a ball and, you know, head for goal and just, you know, have the confidence to just go through and score. I think, you know, he was brilliant the other night. But yeah, just disappointed, obviously, now to sort of be no points from two games, it's going to be an uphill task. I did say last week, I think it was going to be a battle between ourselves and Galatasaray for second place. And obviously that's been made a lot harder now with the game at home losing. I think you've got to win your home games in the Champions League if you've got any chance of going through. So yeah, it's going to be a difficult task for us. And obviously just touching on the Palace game, I think for me, the players that didn't play in the League Cup game who came back in sort of didn't do enough. And I felt really sorry for Hannibal, who didn't really get that opportunity. I think the energy that he's shown and in the previous games with the performances that he's been putting in, I think he will feel really disappointed that he didn't really get a chance to carry on that good form. I did say if you playing well, you should keep the shirt. I think he would have made a big difference in that game because the energy wasn't there and it looked really flat. And we just didn't look like we was going to break Crystal Palace down. I think we could have played till, you know, the weekend after and we still wouldn't have put the ball on the back of the net. I think it was just that bad. You know, players looked shot and a lack of confidence. And it was really worrying because you obviously look at the start of the season and sort of to only be, you know, picking up points against, you know, Burnley, Nottingham Forest and Wolves. And to be fair, in them games, we rode our luck and sort of on another day could have only come away with a point or no points. So it's going to be a really, really difficult couple of weeks. I think the only thing that is a good thing is we've got a lot of home games coming up. And I think obviously the fans will try and get behind the team as much as they can. But we definitely need to sort of improve and get some players back in because we've shown that the depth of the squad and when we do, you know, have to rely on other players on a consistent basis, we just aren't there, and we've shown that we're not up to the task on sort of numerous occasions.
Yeah, very, very tough night. Lee, before we came on air, you were saying that you actually felt United had the better of the game against Galatasaray. But obviously, you know, we threw it away from 2-1 up. What did you make of it?
It's just so disappointing, mate. I genuinely think when you watch the match back, we were probably the better side overall. But we can't defend the lead. We just can't defend the lead at the minute. You know, it's a lack of discipline. It's again watching the goals, lack of effort, people jogging back. You know, it's just basics of football, which if we did them right, we would have won the game. I mean, and also missing the chances we had. I mean, what I can remember off the top of my head, Mason Mount had two good chances. Fernandez right at the beginning. Rashford were, instead of basically one-on-one, 5-10 yards out, squaring a ball and not making the pass to Fernandez, obviously due to what I would presume was a complete lack of confidence. You know, it's a game that we should have won quite easily. And I think I put it on my Twitter at the end of the game. For me, we're just a mess at the minute. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I think the club's a mess from the top downwards. You know, we've got owners what, for me, don't give a toss about the club. All they're bothered about is money, which I get, the businessmen at the end of the day. But you think they care about us a little bit. For me, they don't care whatsoever. We've got players which are getting suspended and getting left out of the starting 11 and the squads for different reasons, which they shouldn't be. We've got players calling the manager out. For me, it's not Man United. It's not the way we are. It's not the way the club runs. And it's the only way I can describe it for me is a big mess at the minute, and it needs clearing up. But I think until something gets sorted from the top with the Glazers and that issue gets resolved, whether they're staying, whether they're going, whether they're selling, that needs to get sorted first, and then hopefully once that gets sorted, that'll trickle down to the squad and the players. And I've got to include Ten Hag in that too a little bit. Don't really want to call him out too much, but we was on about it just off a minute ago about, you know, Amrabat playing left back. Every person I've spoke to, United fan or not, for me it seems clear what everybody's saying. Why in the hell have we signed? Bear in mind, it's a player that I was screaming out for us to sign Amrabat, you know. I thought he'd be a player what would come in and sit next to Casemiro and strengthen our midfield up no ends. And we're playing him at a right-footed defensive midfield player at left-back. You know, for me, it makes no sense. I mean, you've got Dalot, who can play left-back, although, you know, he's right-footed, but he knows that position. He knows how to where to be and what runs to watch out for and how to play that. For me, it's a no-brainer. You've got to put Dalot at left-back and put Lindelof at right-back and choose who you're putting in at centre-half and put Amrabat where he's going to be effective for the team. And if we do that, we won't get past through as easily, because at the minute, every team we've played just cutting and slicing through our midfield like we're non-existent. I've got to get on Ten Hag back a little bit about that, because I just feel like he's making the wrong decision playing Amrabat where he's playing him. And the other thing, the last thing I took from it was I've tried to not pass judgment too quickly on Onana, give him the benefit of the doubt. Obviously, It's come to a new league, new team. But I've got to be completely honest. If it come down to now, me thinking, who would I rather have in nets for the rest of the season? Would it be De Gea or would it be Onana? I'd be bringing back De Gea all day long, and that's my honest opinion. I think it's kind of showing now with how the team are performing and not having De Gea in the nets. And you just look back at how many times one-on-one saves and pulling worldly saves out. It probably saved us, and probably the only reason we're finished in, you know, where we've been finishing the last couple of years is because we've had De Gea in the nets. And for me, that's becoming more and more obvious as the games go on.
Quite brutal, Lely, and I can't disagree with what you're saying. Phil, I'm going to bring you in on this point. What Lee was mentioning, and we did talk about it briefly before you joined us in the green room, which is a posh name of saying we were just waiting to press the go live button. It's exactly the same colour, the grey screen. The Rashford chance, you know, play low on confidence. Now, you guys weren't at United when social media was quite as rife as it is now. And obviously, it's not just a case of people being on social media and saying things, but they tag him in stuff. And, you know, even a player with how many million followers he's got, you're going to see some of this stuff. And, like, you know, it's not just criticism. Like Rashford in particular gets it in the neck more than anyone, as much as, well, Maguire gets it as well. But they're two really high-profile targets for criticism. And you get these idiots, there's no other word for it. Look, a footballer is in the public eye and they get praise. It's no different in theory to me in my profession. I write a book, I get praise. I also get criticism, right? That's what happens when you put something out there or when you do something and it's somewhat in the public eye. You are there to get praise. Footballers, very highly paid and you know, get a lot of praise on this very public platform, and they also get a lot of criticism for when it doesn't go right. But and that's part of the process, and everyone understands that. What's not part of the process and what's not fair is the persecution and the personal abuse that these people get, to the point where our captain's mum or our former captain's mum and sister and family members are coming out on social media and saying stuff. Even Garnacho's brother is on social media, like posting stuff about whether, you know, it's frustration and he deletes a lot of stuff if Garnacho doesn't come on. But what I mean is, like, these players have relatives who are seeing things, they're seeing the frustration, they see it, and it's a very not toxic but very volatile environment because things are so low, the mood's so low at the club, and everyone's getting it in the neck. And because people are getting it in the neck, they don't want to be seen as the fall guy for the crisis at this club, and no one individual is. It's like Lee says, it's a lot of issues. There's a lot of defense there, and you can understand that. But what I don't understand is the level of persecution from our people who are supposed that they claim that they're supporters. So they put up a failed compilation. There's one guy who was doing it week on week. He's like, every time Rashford plays, he starts up a new Word document and he's listing the minutes of the errors. I mean, you can do that for every single player. You can say that a player, you know, like you could do it for Kevin De Bruyne. You could do it for Haaland. You could say that they didn't do this right. You could make any player, like on YouTube, I like, you can make them look good and you can make them look bad. And it's not fair because then they tag the player in the post and everyone is lumping in on this kind of thing. I'm getting to in a long-winded way, Phil, is that's beyond the pale. That's too far. And do you agree? I mean, Lee somewhat made the point earlier that, you know, surely that's part of the reason why you see Rashford in the position that he's in. He's got so much time. He's got at least, in football terms, maybe 3 or 4 seconds to make a decision. He's running through. He's clear. He's got a chance to score. And he's probably thinking, I'm getting slagged off so much on social media by people who are saying that the fans, should I pass it? And by the time he's made the decision, it's too late. Do you think that that sort of stuff played on his mind when you see the decision that he made on Tuesday night?
I think, you know, clearly there was something on his mind, because I think this time last year he would have, you know, just buried that, because his confidence was through the roof. I think last year, you know, every time he got in a shooting position, he was looking to pull the trigger. He was creating half a yard and getting shots off left, right and centre. He had that spring in his step. But again, this year, I think, you know, since he's came back, yeah, you know, he's played okay in spells. He's made quite a lot of assists. But you can see he's not quite got that, you know, glint in his eye. He's not quite got that sort of, you know, swagger that he had last year. And again, a lot of that probably does come down to, you know, stuff that gets highlighted on social media. You know, me and Lee didn't really have any of that when we was playing, because there wasn't anything really about other than, you know, Facebook and stuff like that. So the scrutiny that some of these players are under, you know, on a week-to-week basis at such a big club, Man United, you know, biggest club in the world, spotlights on you every single week, every single detail, every single touch, you know, body language, you know, whether you don't run back, gets highlighted, gets shown, gets, you know, sent, people tagged in it. And I do feel for the players at times, because I think all this stuff is a lot to take on and deal with. And I think it is probably best for a lot of them to probably stay off social media and just not bother with it at all, because the amount of stick and abuse and compilations and, you know, all the stuff that gets thrown around is sort of brutal, and it would definitely have an effect and sort of, you know, make you feel, you know, disvalued. So for me, I think Rashford at this moment in time, you can certainly see that he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders. He's not playing with the freedom that he was last year. But I think that comes down to not just him, you know, as a team, where we are at the moment, all the stuff that's been going on from the start of the season, the ownership, you know, the manager, all these kind of issues that are going on with the club are sort of being detrimental, and it's all leaking onto the pitch. I think you can tell that the mood around the camp isn't great. The team spirit's not there. There's no cohesion between the players. And I just fear really that, you know, this is going to keep dragging on week by week, and we're going to sort of, you know, by Christmas sort of be out of all competitions and sort of not playing for anything other than, you know, maybe trying to finish in the top 6-7, because I really can't see us, you know, finishing in the top four on current form and the way the club's going at this moment in time. So it's really worrying times. Hopefully he can sort of pick himself up and try and, you know, forget about all this criticism and sort of just get back to basics with, you know, working hard. And as a centre forward, it is frustrating at times, because no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, things you try and pull off, things don't go your way. But you've got to just keep working through that. And what I mean by that is you've got to just work hard, do the basics, not feel sorry for yourself, not throw your arms about, not, you know, get disappointed when things don't fall your way, because eventually you will turn the corner and then the goals will start to come. I think the manager did come out and say that, you know, he has got faith that Rashford will come good, but that is only on the, you know, pretense that he keeps working hard and does his part. Because if, as I say, if he feels sorry for himself and you know, he slumps into that sort of moody, sulky, you know, feeling sorry for himself Marcus Rashford that we've seen, you know, 18 months ago, we're sort of, you know, nobody's going to be a winner from that. And it's, you know, then going to be a difficult situation, because he's probably going to have to start leaving him out and giving other players an opportunity, because the fan base won't put up with it.
Yeah. Interesting comments there, Phil. A comment from Talking Tennis Day says, "Hi guys, I'm not as down about the club as many are, and I'm far from an optimist. But Lee, I want to come to you on the wider point that you were talking about earlier about the takeover and everything like that, potential takeover. I mean, one avenue, one train of thought is that it needs the takeover to fix the club and for things to start, you know, the takeover to be done, or even some kind of public statement to say it's not happening, so the fans know where they stand and the club knows where they, you know, everyone knows where they stand and can move forward from that position. Because it does feel like there is a little bit of limbo there. So just like taking into account everything apart from a potential takeover, you know, obviously it would make better sense for there to be clarity sooner rather than later on that. And bearing in mind, let's say, for the sake of argument, there's an ongoing process with a takeover, and that means you're unlikely to see a manager get sacked. You know, like if someone's looking over the books, you're not going to see a massive financial decision like a manager getting sacked and all his staff room getting sacked and another one being brought in. You're not going to see that kind of decision. It's unlikely that you will in the short term. So taking all that into consideration, what does Ten Hag do with what's at his disposal? Yeah, Phil said going back to basics, and you said it earlier, and it's something that I did mention on Monday's podcast with Paul and Dave, that, you know, the obvious solution in defence is either putting Lindelof at right back or at least Amrabat there, because Lee will know this. Well, Phil will know it because he's played full back as well, and you played right full back, Phil, is that you didn't play left back for a reason, right? Because of the spatial awareness around you. And I think Mike Duxbury, I mentioned about Mike Duxbury, told me this when he was playing. He could play right back because he was using his positional awareness on that right-hand side, because he's right-footed, came natural to him. And obviously that's why you want a left footer on that side. Disappointing that Reguilon's not going to be available tomorrow, but like you say, Lee, Dalot has played that position before. And maybe Ten Hag's solution in the short term is something like, stop playing the square pegs in the round holes, you know, go with something as back to basics as that, you know, put Dalot there, at least he's got experience in that position. And then maybe, and it sounds like a really stupid thing, but looking at what the difference that Garnacho makes when he comes on, looking at the difference that Hannibal makes to that midfield, regardless of who misses out here. And I know Mount played probably his best game for the club against Galatasaray in amongst all that chaos. He still played pretty well. But you want to flood that team with kids. You know, if Maynou's available, you put him in. You try and put as many of them in as possible to galvanise the crowd. I mean, you know, obviously there's a drop-off in experience there. You're losing something there, but you are gaining a connection back with a crowd who were looking quite apathetic on, well, they have done the last couple of games. There's been a lot of frustration in the stands at Old Trafford. Lee, long, rambly question again, but how does Ten Hag, from the what he's got available at it with him at the moment, including all the injuries, how does he tackle what's in front of him for the next month or so?
It's a difficult one, Wayne. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said go back to basics. You know, don't try and overcomplicate. Don't try and shoehorn players like we are doing. Obviously, the manager's the manager, and we've all got to get on board with what he wants to do. He's seeing these lads week in, week out in training. You know, he's the one what's making the decisions. And if it's the same as when we played, you know, you get picked. However you train all week, and if you train well all week and you're doing well and you're training better than your competitor in your team, then you're going to get picked. I certainly don't disagree with putting a few young lads in if they're fit and available. Again, injury has been a massive problem for him. You know, we've not only got the uncertainty with the club, with the ownership, like we said from the top, where, like I said, just a bit of clarity on what's happening would do everyone a world of good. Instead of a guessing game, is it getting took over? Is it not getting took over? You know, so we've got that on top of everyone's head. That'll be on top of the manager's head too. He doesn't know, you know, if the manager's staying. Sorry, not the managers, if the owners are staying, what's going to be available to him, you know, money-wise and what he can and can't do. And, you know, so he's got that pressure too. But if he did, like I said, we did get Kobe back soon, Garnacho, maybe Palistra. What you're going to gain there is you're going to gain a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of hard work and a lot of young lads wanting to impress to stay acclaimed, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
To be part of the squad, part of the first team, and you will get that relationship back with the fans. You know, Man United are a club where we pride ourselves on bringing young legs through. We've done it for many, many, many years now. We're probably one of the best, if not the best in England at doing that. I certainly wouldn't be disappointed. Whether he does that or not, I don't know. I'm not sure whether he's going to do that or not. A couple of positives just on a different note. Obviously, we've been very negative. I think Mason Mount for a couple of games now looks like he's becoming the player I thought we'd buy. He impressed me against Galatasaray. He's one of a few. Højlund again, absolutely superb. One of the best, you know, out and out number nine performances I've seen from Man United for a long time. In a mad game, and are you going to mention Eriksen too? I think when Eriksen come on, he actually changed the game. You know, he gave us another avenue. So he's got players there for me. What's available still? I mean, we've got a mad injury crisis. Don't get me wrong. It's a list which, you know, I don't envy that. You know, who's on that list? But we've still got a strong enough squad, and we've still got players there to be able to create problems for the vast majority of teams. You know, in England. Who he's got at his disposal. So I think all he can do is go off who he thinks he's got his training better. He's, you know, he looks like they want to put the effort in. I think that's another main thing too. Like I say, on a couple of the goals, and I've watched them back against Galatasaray, there's midfield players and centre-backs. I mean, the first goal, when Dalot got, you know, he got bullied off the ball, let's be honest, for Van, and I think it was Lindelof too. They might as well have walked back. They didn't make no attempt to, you know, cover the man in case he got beat. For me, again, it was just very, very basic defending. And it's rather a lack of effort or a lack of discipline for me. Now, if they're not going to put it in, they're going to keep showing this week in, week out. They're going to have to work the team. They're going to have to put other lads in. If they're not potentially, you know, as experienced or as good of players as what you'd like to think we've got in the first team, they've got to be dropped anyway and get some lads in who's willing to put the shift in. Because, believe me, a lot of football games can be won on effort and effort alone, which we see a lot, you know. So, yeah, that's how I'd go about it, mate. And I think that's all they can do.
Yeah. It does, like, arc back to the Brentford away game last season, and it's something that I've said a few times, like, and it seems really, really silly. And this squad should know it because they were the squad who went through this, you know, that putting in that effort, putting in those yards made the difference. And that should be, I would have thought, from that lesson, that's the basic thing that you need to do with a Manchester United team. You need to be putting in those odd yards, like against Liverpool, all right, it made the difference. But you need to be doing that against every team, because if you don't do it, you get battered. We don't have the quality, even with the players that we brought in, you still need to be able to do that because teams are going to try harder, even against the Manchester United team who are down on the look, who perhaps, you know, they're not on quality at the moment, good enough to qualify for the Champions League. Phil, Lee tried to be positive. I'm going to pull it back and be negative for a moment. I'll just read out Talking Tennis's latest comment. He says, Eriksen played well after coming on. Ten Hag was unlucky with going down to 10 men as Eriksen was not ideally suited in that moment where 2-2 was acceptable. At 1-1, we had to change. No, I absolutely agree with you there, mate. But yeah, in terms of being more pessimistic, you look at the fixture list in front. I know we're going to talk about Brentford in a moment, but the fixture list in front of that, because I mean, I remember, I look back a couple of years ago when Mourinho was manager, and the last game before the October international break, we played Newcastle and we're 2-0 down at home, and we came back and Sanchez scored in the last minute. And that was at the time when everyone was saying Zidane was going to take over, and Edvard was sat next to him and Ed Woodward in the stands. And I don't know if you remember that moment, but and Sanchez, and it was kind of like everyone was saying, oh, this might be the turning point and everything. But it seemed obvious that that was like a tiny sticking plaster, that things were going wrong. And I don't want to sound too negative and say if we win tomorrow, it doesn't really matter. But you look at the running games afterwards, it's just Sheffield United away. And I know they just lost 8-0 at home, but you know that doesn't mean anything. They'll probably win against us, you know, like, you know what I mean? The way that the fixture list goes with that. Copenhagen are going to come to Old Trafford and feel very bullish about getting a result. Even if United win that one, the City the game after. And you know what I mean? I've got this feeling, I was talking about it with Lee before, and I've said it on the other podcasts I've been on this week. I feel like even though it's really bad at the moment, I still feel like there's something else, like something catastrophic with the team that we've not seen yet. You know, and we've used to seeing team, you know, we conceded 6 goals at City, we lost 7 at Liverpool last season, conceded 5 at home to Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? This is a team who can plummet to the lowest of lows, and I feel like there's another of those before you know, this washout moment. You know, I was talking, the point I was making to Lee is that, you know, United, remember under Fergie with Keane, it took Keane going. This is a massive figure in United history. It took him going to be the catalyst for a positive change. And, like, you know, it felt like the storm was over and things started to get better after that. Maybe it's impossible to happen without the takeover. Do you know what I mean? Like a takeover happening soon and then 3 or 4 names going in January, even if it leaves the squad light, if the squad's alleviated of the bad mood that's around, that's what it's going to take for us to kick on. Do you think I'm being too pessimistic? Do you think that there's another low coming, or do you think that it can't be as bad as what we've seen recently?
It's interesting. I think obviously with the way things have started this season, for me, I can't really see anything changing anytime soon in terms of performances, results on the pitch, takeovers. You know, I think we're just sort of going to be in a bit of a lull now for a bit of a period of time, and then, you know, when it gets to Christmas time, you're hoping then, you know, another bid comes in, or, you know, we can maybe get a few players through the door to bolster the squad. For me, I think as well, just when we've been talking, I've just been thinking about it, and I think for me as well, what a lot of our players don't seem to realise and don't seem to have grasped, which is crazy to me, is that, you know, every team that comes to Old Trafford, or every team that, you know, rocks up to town to play Manchester United, they want to beat Manchester United. That's their biggest game of the season. You know, everyone wants to, you know, have Man United as a scalp. So they're going to be coming with the bit between the teeth, and you know that you're going to be in for a battle. You know that they're going to be putting 110% in. So as I said, if you're not going to be, you know, on your game, technically, the minimum requirement that you've got to do is put a shift in and work your socks off and try your best to win them individual battles. And I think for me at this moment in time, when I watch the team, when I watch, you know, the last, you know, 6-7 games especially, okay, we've got injuries and we can feel sorry for ourselves a little bit with that, but no, you've got to stand up and be counted. And some of these players that are coming in, this is their opportunity now to keep the place and to show the manager that they deserve to be in the team. And it's just not been happening on a regular basis. Too many players losing individual battles who shouldn't be. Too many players not putting the effort in to the requirements that we've needed. So hence, that is why we're sort of struggling results-wise. But then Lee mentioned it before as well. I think the manager sort of needs to, you know, take a little bit of ownership on that as well. When I watch us, I don't really see any patterns of play. I don't really see any sort of style of play that I'm sort of seeing on a regular basis. I think sort of a lot of the time I see stuff and it just looks a little bit off the cuff. You know, we mentioned there about Amrabat playing at left back. He's a right-footed player. And for me, you know, when you're playing at the back and you're switching the play quickly, Lee will tell you, as a fullback, you want to be receiving a pass. And it's only a small detail, this, but, you know, I watch games and I see it and I think, you know, you want to be receiving that on your back foot, which is a left back, is your left foot, and you're pushing the ball into the space, driving forward, and you want to feed your winger. And I think because we haven't got players who are natural in them positions, and as we said about shoehorning players in positions, we're not getting that fluidity with the team, and we're having to sort of, you know, cut back inside and play, and we're all pragmatic. It's not the style that I think Ten Hag is trying to implement in the team, and that's down to these little details of, for me as well, the midfield. I think we're sort of a little bit leggy in the midfield. There's not that energy there, which is what I mentioned, obviously, about Hannibal. You know, when he was in there, okay, the experience isn't there, but he'll run all day, he'll put a shift in, he'll do the hard yards, he'll get up and down. And for me, I would sacrifice that over experience at this moment in time because of where we are. So for me, I just think that, you know, the manager's got a difficult one with you know, does he put the younger players in and sacrifice getting a little bit of stick if it doesn't go right because of, you know, the more bigger names or the more experienced players or reputation. But for me, I would just throw all that out the window and bite the bullet and go, listen, you lads aren't performing. These young lads have shown the hunger, the desire. At least I know I'm going to get 100% effort. And what have you got to lose? At the end of the day, you know, we're not playing well enough to sort of, you know, give some of these players a free pass and be warranted a place in the team.
Yeah, there are some players there that, I mean, obviously there's a big quality gap and some of them aren't good enough, but Dango played all right when he came on in the League Cup the other night. Obviously, Manu, we're all itching to see him play. Garnacho probably deserves his starting chance, even though when he has started this season, he's looked a little bit lost, but he deserves that chance now. And Hannibal, I'm speaking as a supporter. I know you guys, you know, you already alluded to the facts earlier, but the thing that we see from you guys that we, I say you guys, as young players coming through the first team, is that you're so used to that attitude against everyone who's played against you at youth team level. You're so used to everyone wanting United to be the scalp that you're already preconditioned to accept that that's the minimum that you've got to give on the pitch. So there is a compensation there. Yeah, all right, when the quality is not that high, it, you know what I mean? That effort can maybe not count for a lot, but... it still counts for what we see in the eyes of the supporters. And I'm speaking for myself only personally that I'm more forgiving of that. If I see a youth team player giving his best and I can forgive the lack of quality, I can't forgive a player who's got the quality but doesn't have the application. When I see it too often, it's, you know, we have seen that too often, unfortunately. And I don't think it's a case of, you know, I think I'm fairly patient as a fan. As far as patient supporters go, I think I'm up there on the good scale of that. But I think you have to face facts. And the facts are that these United players haven't won a league title. There's not been a league title won for 10 years. So they're not good enough to win league titles. Some of them who are at the club now might be, but they've got to get players better around them to be able to do that. And these players, the ones who are there, who haven't won a title for so many years, they're not about to spring any miracles. I don't think it's fair for their careers as it is for the supporters. They've had the chance, and I think United want to progress. I think you know what I mean? It's a privilege to play for United. It's a privilege to be on that platform. And if you've proven that the time it hasn't worked out for you, I know that it's a difficult place to let go of, but their careers are only short as well, and surely they want to be remembered for having a positive contribution, because it's not fair on those players as well that they're going to be remembered as players who just underachieved at United when they could go elsewhere and have really good achievements away from the burden, because it's a massive burden for them as well, as we were talking earlier, not just Rashford, other players getting it in the neck as well. Lee, come on to you first, talking about Brentford at the weekend. Pretty much a similar pattern to what we were talking about last week with Palace. You look at their season so far and you say, you know what, they've not pulled up any trees. They were unlucky at Forest, and Forest have been all right this season. They came to Old Trafford and give us a game. They've always played well against us, Brentford. It's not straightforward as saying United are going to win this one, is it?
I don't think any game's straightforward as saying United is going to win with any team at the moment, Wayne, if I'm being honest, pal. Again, like, Phil hit the nail on the head. I know my mic was muted there, but when Phil was talking, what I was thinking, what we used to get told growing up was when people come and play against United, even at youth level, it's their FA Cup final. So every game, you're playing a team what feels like they're in their FA Cup final. So you've got to bring yourself to that level every game, whether it be City, whether it be Burnley, whether you're playing Exeter in the Carling Cup. You know, you've got to bring yourself to a minimum requirement of realising, noticing that every single person or every team that comes up against you is going to put that extra 10% of effort in, and they want to beat Man United. So it's a minimum that we accept that. And like I said, me and Phil grew up at the club, but it might be easier for us and have more knowledge about that because that's all we knew. You know, so we was used to that, and we got drummed into us. And we kind of get that now with the guys coming in from different clubs and, you know, from foreign clubs, and they might not really understand that yet. But surely after the start of the season, what we've got, it's they're going to have to start understanding it. You know, we can't keep going through games where we're getting beat, like I've mentioned a few times, through lack of effort and lack of discipline. And that, for me, against Brentford, is going to be our undoing unless we turn the effort around. We've definitely got the quality on the pitch, even with the injuries we've got. We've still got in our squad the depth in the squad, the quality on paper to do a number on Brentford. But they're going to have to be at it from the start and at it from the races, or else, you know, it's going to be another miserable podcast next Friday, I suspect. So, yeah, I've not really got much to say about it. There's not really much to say about the game. There's not much to pick up. It depends on what team the manager picks, whether he agrees with us, and probably 95% of the fan base were, you know, it's hard to say, let's get the defence sorted out, because no matter what defence he puts out with what he's got available to him, it's nowhere near our strongest back four. Does he keep the keeper in? Or for me, the keeper's had enough blunders now and enough cock-ups for me, and it might be a bit harsh for warranting, you know, getting left out of the squad and putting, is it Bayinder in? Let's have a look at Bayinder. We can't keep letting players feel like they can, you know, keep getting away with having poor performances and going to be a cert for a pick, the next match. If that's going to be the mentality of the players, then they're not going to be bothered if they've had an off day or, you know, an off couple of days, because they're going to think, well, I'm going to walk straight back into the team. But when you have that complacency, that's going to be toxic for the team. So, yeah, for me, it hurts, but an earner would drop to the bench. I'd put Amrabat up in there with Casemiro, Dalot at left, Lindelof at right. And I don't know with Varane, obviously, I think Varane, if he's fit, and that's a big if, he'll definitely start. And at the minute, I've wrote at the side of him Maguire, but I'm just looking at Varane and Maguire as a two, and I'm thinking there's not much legs there whatsoever. And I know Johnny Evans is pushing 35 now, but I think he's probably got more legs than Maguire. So, and he's been a much more aerial threat when he's played than Maguire seems. So I don't know if I'm changing my mind with that. I'm thinking I'd put Evans in, and that's something, if you would have asked me what I said that last season, I would have thought someone was taking drugs. I never thought he'd be back at the club whatsoever, but, you know, when he's coming, he's done well, you know. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I think until we can get our back four back, as you know, as a unit, as Luke Shaw coming back, and, you know, Martinez and Varane and Wan-Bissaka or Dalot at right back, and getting that core, we're going to struggle against most teams, because we're not settled. It's getting changed all the time, and we need that settled back four.
Yeah, perfectly said, Lee. There's a comment in there from Talk of Tennis. Cheers for the comments tonight, lad. He says, my team for tomorrow, want an honour like De Gea in 2011. He's still the future. Right back, Evans. Centre backs, Maguire and Varane. Left back, Dalot. Midfield, Diamond off Amrabat. Casemiro, Mount, Bruno. Up front, Rashford and Hoyland. I mean, I'm not far away from that, Phil. I'm thinking, you know, maybe you put Amrabat back at right back and then Hannibal in midfield and have Evans in place of Maguire. That's assuming that Varane's fit. And then the rest of it is how I would go. I mean, regardless of that, it's a matter of confidence as well, not just the shape and the players. It's the you know, the confidence and if they can really put in a shift, like, you know, we've been saying all along. But, you know, Evans and Hannibal at least give you that sort of core of, you know, understanding what it is like to be United and Rashford, I guess, but he's not a worker in the same way. And that they gave you this, you know, Bruno at least is going to put the yards in, Amrabat in his normal midfield position, or even from right back, a more settled position for him in terms of being the balance on the right hand side. How do you see tomorrow going?
I just think that we need to try Amrabat in the midfield. I think the last couple of games we've sort of been overrun and sort of we haven't had the legs in there. And I think for him personally, I think he would benefit far more from being in that central position. I think that's exactly what we bought him for. You know, him and Casemiro with sort of Bruno needs to be tested just to see if that can be something that works and we can move forward with. In terms of the back four, you know, it's a bit of a shambles at the minute with injuries and, you know, players, you know, having to play in, you know, different positions than they probably would like to. So, yeah, I think, you know, the back four, you could maybe look at Dallow and, you know, probably Johnny Evans maybe coming in at fullbacks. But for me, I just think we've got to match the intensity and match the work rate of Brentford, because that's one thing that they always do. Regardless of results and performances, they always come in and put a shift in. Okay, the quality might be up and down from week to week with Brentford, but, you know, they work hard for the manager, they work hard for each other. And I think, you know, that is the biggest thing, really, what we are lacking at the moment. That cohesion, that, you know, working for your teams, you know, work for your teammates, sorry. I think that's massively lacking. So I would like to see maybe Hannibal or one of the other younger players come in just for that sort of, you know, to freshen it up and just give us that little bit more energy and exuberance, I think, you know. And the manager maybe does need to make a big call at to sort of wake a few of these players up and be like, I am, you know, able to make big calls like he's proven before, because I think we've sort of fell back into that little bit of complacency and a little bit of some of these players, especially with the injuries that we've got, just, you know, regardless of performances, expecting to be, you know, picked. So for me, it's you know, something's got to change, and I hope the manager is bold and does make a big decision like that, because it certainly needs shaking up from the last couple of games.
Yeah, well, he's bold. Let's see if bold is best bad pun to end on. But the lads are going to go and watch the rugby and hopefully have more positive results than what has been seen lately. That's it for this week, guys. If you've enjoyed, if you can like and subscribe on the channel, if you are listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe if you don't already, and leave a comment and a review on the platform you're listening on. I'll just have one more comment before we head off. Casey, hope you well, mate. He says, on and on, he's 27. Dave was 20 when he arrived. I'd expect a bit more, to be honest. I think Kovar was the future, and maybe that's why there's buyback clause. Yeah, there's that in a few other places, isn't there? And I agree with you on Anana. I don't think I'd take him out just yet, just because the team's so bereft of confidence. I'd still maybe give him a couple more games in there before you make the change and buy in. Deer isn't, he's not the long term, he's on loan, and I don't know if it's undermining him too far. Do you know what I mean? And it's very difficult situation. There's no right or wrong answer for Ten Hag at the moment. There's such brittle confidence throughout the squad that no matter what you do, you're upsetting a player, and United are, you know, he's got to manage that the best way that he can. And I don't envy him at the moment. There's no transfer window until January, so you're left with these players for 3 months. You've got to manage it the best way that you can. And with an injury crisis, the list that United have got, then it's not an enviable task. And even a game against Brentford at home for Manchester United doesn't look straightforward. But we will be back next week to discuss the outcome of that. Hopefully it'll be more positive than this one, like Lee said. Although, knowing my capabilities this week, I'm sure to bring you down. Even if we win 6-0, I'll find something negative to crow about. But yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, guys. And we will be back next week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.